Next case is 03-2080, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Robert Alsfelder. Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm here representing Bob Alsfelder, who is sitting in the second row behind me. I would like to simply say to the court that at the hearing before the panel, the Cincinnati Bar Association, the relator, as well as in its memorandum in response to our objections, has painted Bob Alsfelder as a greedy, sinister attorney who's preying on a vulnerable client. It's a one-sided version. All of Bob's testimony with respect to his motives, what he was attempting to do for Mary Ranke, was dismissed. I guess it's easy when an attorney charges a fee to say cynically, he had larceny in his heart, preying on a vulnerable client. In this case, it simply isn't true. The simple truth is that the Bar Association cannot know what was in Bob Alsfelder's heart. They cannot know. They can presume, they can make very effective arguments about what his intent was, but the simple truth is they cannot know. Who knows? Bob knows. Who else knows? Those who know Bob. There were 8 character letters submitted on Bob's behalf as to his honesty and integrity and his character. I happen to like Mark Crumbine, who testified in person before the panel. He stated that Bob believes his clients. He gave an example, his testimony's on 257 to 261. He said he represented somebody who was had been convicted of insurance fraud and now was being charged with embezzlement, or the indictment was coming down, but the man said he didn't do it, and Bob believed him. And guess what? Bob proved what the guy was saying was true. Mark Crumbine says, Bob had full faith in this guy and he did a great job. I have found over the years that he's totally dedicated. He calls day and night. If I handle a case, he calls 10 minutes after the hearing or case is over. He's very conscientious and he really tries hard.
Counsel, I appreciate your bringing all the character issues out, but some of the facts need some careful explaining, such as why your client charged an increasingly higher flat fee for essentially being a friend, talking to her, keep holding her hand, taking her to dinner, not for legal advice. And that is the distinction that I think you need to explain. How can you justify your client charging legal fees at a very high rate for almost no legal work?
Well, Your Honor, I think that Bob, who is a compassionate person, who's totally dedicated to his clients, his mistake was, and he made a mistake, his mistake was that he tried to help Mary Ranke in every aspect of her life, and not just for her legal needs. That was his mistake.
Well, that's all well and good, but it's one thing to try to help somebody, it's another thing to charge them legal fees for advice that had nothing to do with the law. That's the distinction that I'm struggling with, and what seems to be the basis of the opinion. He could be a very wonderful, worthy person, but he's charging money. So that kind of puts it in a little different light. He's charging money for all of this friendly, kind, always available advice, and it's not legal advice. How do you justify that?
Well, I have two responses, Your Honor. One is, I have a great deal of difficulty determining what is legal advice and what isn't. For example, Mary Ranke admitted he advised her on insurance policies, both auto and health insurance. He advised her on her ceramics business in Xenia. He advised her and gave her advice and counsel on her ex-husband who was stalking her. He advised her with respect to her miscarriage. He advised her in all the issues that came up in her life, such as faulty driveway repairs, getting Tim Trader, who was farming her farm, off of the farm. It's a mixed bag of quasi-legal life help. Bob's mistake is that he devoted himself to his client and all of her needs, whether they be quasi-legal or non-legal or legal. And in Bob's mind, I can tell you that with a domestic relations lawyer, I'm sure as well, when someone calls up upset with something, you help him in their issues. Bob's mistake is that he cares too much. He is too devoted to his clients. And in Bob's mind, he is simply charging not premium rates, but if you think about, and I'm asking this court to think about this, imagine a client calling 3 to 4 times a day with issues that had to be important to her. She's not demanding to talk to Bob while he's with another client saying, let's talk about the weather. These are issues that are important to her. She is calling asking for his advice, his counsel on quasi-legal matters, legal matters, personal matters. And what does Bob do? Because he's compassionate, an old-fashioned lawyer who is also a friend as well as your lawyer, which I don't think should be discouraged in this profession at all.
What was the benefit to her when he led her to believe that she could designate a person to as a beneficiary when he knew the lawsuit was pretty clear that wasn't the benefit to her, wasn't holding out that hope. He went to Arizona maybe legitimate, second one, I guess not legitimate, in terms of charging her for it. What was the benefit to her of that conduct?
Your Honor, with all due respect, that is a factual dispute, and the question assumes that he led her to believe that's true.
The panel apparently believed that she believed that was true.
She may have believed that was true, but Bob testified that he never led her to believe that he would be successful. In fact, it was she who hated her cousins to such a degree that she insisted that Bob do this, even though he told her it was a slim chance.
Why
now,
I guess I wonder why you would go to trouble traveling out west to meet with this person that he knew could not fulfill her wish legally.
Bob.
Doesn't the lawyer at some point have the obligation to say, client, I can't do this for you?
Yes, you're right.
Happen, so I won't do it for you. Isn't that part of what a lawyer's obligation?
Yes, it is. And Bob made a mistake in that regard. He told her it was a slim chance. But here's the problem. Bob devotes himself to such a degree to his clients. He knows this is what she wants. He says, I know the first appellate district is against me, but there's a chance, and even she admitted that he talked about it'd be long and involved and it would be ultimately decided in Columbus if this court decided to hear it. But he decided to give it a chance because he devotes himself entirely to his client.
But he didn't do this out of the devotion and kindness of his heart. He charged her to take these extraneous long shots on well-settled principles of law. And her vulnerability, I think, needs to be addressed here. And I'd be interested in your response to the characterization that of her vulnerability, both emotionally and intellectually.
Okay. You ask, I think, three questions, but I'm not sure I'm going to get them in the right order.
Okay.
I'll go back the other way, if you don't mind. First of all, as Mark Crumbine testified, who knows Bob Alsfelder, knows that he is caring, compassionate, has a big heart, he devotes himself entirely to his client. We have a vulnerable lady. Yes, she was vulnerable. She wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed, but she was demanding. How do we know that? She hired Jim Lyons, another attorney before Bob Alsfelder. She was not satisfied with Jim Lyons and refused to pay him. If she's not satisfied, she refuses to pay. What does that mean? It means that if something's not done to her satisfaction, she may not be the sharpest tool in the shed, but she knows when she's being satisfied and not being satisfied. Jim Lyons didn't satisfy her, he's gone. Mark Spears testified, a chiropractor. He was the one who gave her Bob's name. She went to him without appointments, and at one point in time, he says, I can't see you. He gets a letter from another chiropractor saying, send me the records. She may not be brilliant, but she knows what she wants, she's demanding, and if she doesn't get it, she doesn't pay for it.
No ability to pick clients who will not cause him this type of problem.
Your Honor.
He's mixing his legal duties to his friendship duties and charging for his friendship duties on top of it.
Your Honor, if I could address the point you're making here. Bob sat down every year with Mary Ranke and said, all I've got is my time. That's my stock and trade. And he said, he told her that repeatedly. She was satisfied. He was a positive influence in her life. He was her deep breader. She paid him. If you add up, imagine someone who gets three or four calls a day, 6 out of 7 days a week, someone that demands that meets you. You can't fake that sincerity.
That wouldn't be one of my clients.
Right, but Bob Alsfelder is different. Bob Alsfelder tries to help everyone in every aspect of their life, and that's the reason he is in this mess, because he cares too much.
And well, in October of 2001, she filed a complaint with the Bar Association against him, so there must have been some falling out at some point prior to that.
There was a falling.
Has he refunded any money to her since that point?
No, he has not. But the point, Your Honor, that I would like to make to the court is that if you add up all of the hours that Bob spent on the phone with her, giving her advice in every aspect of her life, quasi-legal, legal, not legal. If you add that up with the meetings, with his attendance at the annual trustees meeting, the special meetings, the wills, the deeds, all of that, I doubt that his hourly rate would be much more than $50 if it is. So to say that looking at his time, he charged her as a lawyer is not altogether true. I think it's an unfair.
But there have been findings that he violated DR 2106, that he shall not enter into an agreement for an excessive fee. There's been a finding on that.
Okay, Your Honor. Bob Alsfelder had his day in court before the panel, who did not.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
He had his day in court before the panel. The panel observed his demeanor, observed all the witnesses. They made a recommendation that he is willing to accept and live by. He is willing to accept the panel's recommendation, recognizing that his fault, as honorable as it was a fault. She didn't need the legal needs. She may have needed it.
He wants to pay $30,000 back pursuant to the panel. Is that what you're saying?
He is willing to pay her $30,000 back. Of course,
okay.
The panel recommended that he have a year to do that.
Yes.
Thank you. But to a sole practitioner, 6 months actual suspension is, I believe, too harsh when someone's motivation is simply to help somebody in every aspect of their life. If he did this with intent to be greedy, okay, I can see the board's recommendation being true. But the panel found that Bob mistakenly believed that he was earning his fee by the constant phone calls and advice he was giving her. Okay. One last point, and that is maybe we all have a false sense of how much value we are to clients. Maybe we all have a false sense of how profound our advice is. But that was his motivation, and because it was a helpful, compassionate motivation, I think a 6-month actual suspension is too harsh. Thank you.
Mr. Weigel? Counselor, are you Mr. Weigel?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Sorry.
Mr. Check in point, I think. Is that right? Sure. You check in on that?
I thought I checked in. I apologize, Your Honor. I'm new surroundings. And, Breck Weigel, Vorey Sater, Seymour Pews, on behalf of the Relators Cincinnati Bar Association. I'd like first to address some of the comments I heard from the bench. And as I think about this case now, we as lawyers are asked all the time to volunteer our time, to go out, help the needy, get involved in the community, volunteer time for the Bar Association, whatever it might be, but we don't charge our time. And
well, counsel, this was a client, and he did render a presumably valuable service to her in that she came to him because she wanted to get more money out of her trust fund and wanted to she wanted to consume the whole corpus if she could while she was alive, and he got, I don't know what she was getting before, just said she was getting the dividends, and he got it bumped up to $75,000. So starting out, he did something that presumably pleased her, and their relationship started out clearly as attorney-client.
There's no question their relationship started out as attorney-client.
Okay.
And then
a lot of what transpired here appears to me to be what a lot of attorneys end up doing for people that the judge, when they're in a weak moment in the courthouse, collars them and persuades them to take on the guardianship of some poor soul in the community who is drifting about and needs somebody to manage their funds. There was no guardianship here, but my guess is that a lot of these conversations would be more typical for a lawyer to have with someone for whom he or she was guardian rather than attorney-client kind of conversations. Would that be a fair statement?
Not entirely, Your Honor, for this reason. The testimony at trial was roughly 5% of their conversations had anything to do with legal. The rest of it is, I'm scared, it's raining out.
Wards typically call their lawyer guardians with all of those kinds of things, too, and don't get charged for that kind of thing?
Your Honor, the amount of fees that were charged were so excessive on their face. If I can come back and address the initial part of the representation.
Well, I before you do that, I want to march, because nobody's going down through. There were four charges brought, and it would, I'm having difficulty understanding. On page two of the report, it outlines them. The first one's easy to understand, excessive fee. The second one, for which the panel and the board found a violation, is engaging without a full disclosure, shall not accept employment if the exercise of professional judgment on behalf of the client will reasonably may be affected by the lawyer's financial, business, property, or personal interests. I don't understand that, unless an excessive fee is always automatically a violation of that.
I think what the board is referring to there, Your Honor, is specifically referenced at page 7 of the opinion. And after quoting what Mr. Meyer quoted about his mistaken belief that he could charge this, the board goes on and says, the respondent took advantage of Mary Ranke's intellectual and emotional condition to create a fee arrangement which was totally inconsistent with her legal needs. He treated her like a friend and charged her like a lawyer. Respondent should have counseled Mary Ranke that her legal difficulties did not warrant a substantial annual retainer which he charged. And I think that's where the board was headed, is that it's a conflict of interest to change this fee arrangement from an hourly fee, a written agreement, an agreed to hourly rate, to this open-ended fixed fee retainer without explaining to the client, who is vulnerable under these circumstances, that this is a lousy deal for you. This is a great deal for me, and it's a horrible deal for you. You could save a lot more money if I were to charge you on an hourly rate. And he never advised her that. And he testified.
They toss one of these four. Which one do they toss?
They intentionally prejudicing the client.
Yeah, but they find that he didn't keep records of her property and securities.
Failed to maintain records of her monies. And I think what that relates to, Your Honor, and they're not clear. I'll be the first one to admit that.
Yeah,
I wanted to go back to the beginning of this relationship. In July of 1998, they have a written agreement, $225 an hour. The evidence showed, Your Honor, that he spent nowhere near the $10,000 that he claimed to have spent. The record showed, in fact, he had handwritten notes in his recreated time records, which added up to $2,200. We know he had to spend very little time because the trustee's counsel confirmed during this process that he was going to double her income anyway. It was not the efforts of Mr. Allsfelder, with all due respect. And so he comes to her in October 1998, 2 days after this meeting, demands $10,000. She trusts him, she pays him, and lo and behold, they walk away from this meeting with an arrangement where her new flat fee agreement is $13,000 for 7 months, or roughly $25,000 a year.
Okay. Can we agree that the important violation here is excessive fees, and these others, I mean, the third one doesn't even seem to be outlined as to what it is, and the second
In terms of failing to maintain the records, yeah. I would put that number three. I do think that the conflict of interest is significant,
right,
because I think that really goes to the issue of loyalty that exists.
And what's your view of the panel's recommendation? Would that be acceptable to the Cincinnati Bar?
No, it would not, Your Honor, and in fact, that's why we're here, because right. The board has already suspended 6 months of the year.
Right.
And we think it's entirely reasonable for an actual suspension. That's what we asked for at the hearing. We think the facts warrant it. We do have an extraordinarily vulnerable individual here, and we do have we have great differences on in terms of what the motivation was here. But I think the record taken as a whole demonstrates that there was a motive of greed here, of selfishness, and given the entire fact pattern, I think it justifies it.
It's not clear, but reading the board's recommendation, the $30,000 applies to theirs as well?
I believe so, Your Honor. They adopt the panel's recommendation.
Yeah, I guess that was my question. I don't see anything in the board's recommendation that indicates that there should be any restitution. You think it does include that?
That's the way I read it, Your Honor. I would agree with you. It's probably open to debate. But what they do is the board adopted the findings of fact and conclusions of law of the panel. They take one exception. However, it recommends, based on the client's vulnerability, that the respondent serve an actual suspension of 6 months.
But the conclusions of fact and or the findings of fact and conclusions of law are not the penalty or the suspension.
I agree with you.
The board usually is very express about restitution if they're ordering restitution. I was interested in. Obviously, we can create whatever sanction we want, but I wondered why the board would not think there should be restitution, particularly since the respondent is willing to pay some money back.
I would agree that there's certainly some uncertainty there, Your Honor. I would say that in light of the fact that Mr. Alsfelder has agreed in these proceedings that it's a reasonable sum of restitution, I think this court can impose it.
Well, counsel, his agreement is prefaced on his ability to earn an income and not be taken out for the 6 months, I think, and perhaps the board. I'm like the chief. I read that and I wasn't sure, but again, panel recommendations are different than their conclusions of law, generally.
Your Honor, I would submit to you that the record would demonstrate in this case that $30,000 is a fraction of Mr. Alsfelder's income. And you know, I believe he'd be capable of paying. I can't speak for him. But I also think it's relevant that never once did Mr. Alsfelder come forward, and they acknowledge in their brief, by the way, that the legal services performed do not justify the fees charged. They acknowledge that. There's no dispute about that. And it's clear this woman was overcharged. So why then wouldn't there be restitution? And he never once came forward and offered restitution at any point in these proceedings until after the board found against him. Never came forward to offer it, never mentioned it. So I do think it's warranted by the facts. The only other point I would make is I really think there are four points that make this case special or extraordinary. One is that we do have a very vulnerable individual. There's no question she was. They describe her in their brief as needy. That's probably an understatement. If Mary Ranke could appear before you, you could see that she has great difficulty in expressing herself. The panel saw that. They understood it. We have a situation where this is not one isolated incident. It was a pattern of conduct that went over 3.5 years. And there is example after example after example in the record of someone bargaining from a position of superiority and, in my view, not looking after this person's best interests. We have a situation where the individual has not acknowledged the severity of his conduct. Throughout these proceedings, it was always Mary Ranke's fault. She was overbearing, she was demanding, and therefore that justified the fees. And I think those factors alone, as well as the Kuntz case, which we've cited in our brief, would warrant an actual suspension plus restitution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weigel. Mr. Meyer, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Bob Alsfelder has acknowledged that the legal services he provided didn't justify the fee. He never acknowledged that the legal advice and counsel he gave her, which was enormous on a daily basis, 6 out of 7 days a week, didn't justify the fee. The panel specifically found, and this panel observed Bob firsthand, as well as the character witnesses, they specifically found that Bob mistakenly believed that he was earning his fee because of the constant phone calls and advice and time he was giving to Mary Ranke.
He didn't really earn his fee, though, on the getting her distribution from the trust increase. The letter from the trustee indicates that was virtually done before he
not
made contact. Isn't that right? Or
that's incorrect. If you read Bob's testimony in his direct, he tripled her income. From $25,000 to $27,000, he got her $76,000 a year.
Well, they said, the trustees said it should at least be doubled. So
right.
Up to $60,000.
Right.
He didn't have to argue very hard, I guess, to convince the trustee that she should receive more than just the dividends from the Procter & Gamble stock.
That's true. By that time, the attorney for the trust had changed. The fact of the matter is he got her at least $50,000 more a year and another $24,000 in paying off a line of credit on the regular annual meeting thereafter, plus giving her advice in her daily life every day,
well,
half an hour
to
an hour.
Your time is, you've used your time. Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshall, please return to court.